The GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First Five GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category, and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. So I'm really pleased today to be joined by Emma Ryan, who is a GP with a special interest in gambling harms. So over to you, Emma. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means and what your role involves?
I'm a GP partner in a general practice in South East London, as well as a clinical director of a PCN. But for the other 2 days of the week, I'm a GP lead at a service that helps patients experiencing gambling harm. This service was set up in 2019. It was the first of its kind. And I'm the lead GP there. And it has two aims. One is to provide treatment and support for those experiencing gambling harms from all over the country. It's now a national service. But the second additional role I have is around educating and raising awareness in primary care teams.
And so that's really interesting. I'm sure there's lots of people who are sitting there thinking, I didn't even know that was an interest that GPs could have. And clearly, you know, it's a service that has been now running for a little while. How does the service sort of work? How do those patients reach you? And what sort of, I suppose, services or interventions are you offering?
You're absolutely right. Not many GPs know about gambling harms. However, it's been helped this year by the release of NICE recommendations in 2005 on gambling harms. So we are slightly ahead of the curve that we are already embedded at the Royal College of GPs, making a programme for GPs, and we already have a treatment service. And what the treatment service involves is really picking up patients that need really long consultations, so you wouldn't have time to do that in general practice. And it's a mental health assessment. Often when people reach out to a primary care gambling service, which they have access through finding the website after they've put in "I'm experiencing, you know, stress, anxiety." Obviously they don't say they're experiencing gambling harms, but they are aware that things are not going right for them. They do come to us and they get a full mental health assessment, which is holistic. It's then discussed at a multidisciplinary team, which has GPs, mental health nurses, a lead psychiatrist, and we come up with a formulation. And in terms of, I suppose, teaching and educational moment on this podcast, the mainstay of treatment for gambling harms is CBT, as it is for other behavioural addictions. And so we are able to access CBT sessions, normally about 8-10 sessions for individuals. And also, coming from a primary care perspective and using also other team members such as social prescribers, we are able to get help for those other needs that individuals have when they've maybe lost their money, lost their house. We reach out to community mental health teams if they are really suffering a crisis, and really look at them holistically. So it compared to core general practice, you really do get a long time with these patients, and also you get time to really listen to their narrative and their stories. And that's the bit that I really love. I love that as being part of a GP, but also having the longer time is also great as well.
It sounded a bit like there that people are reaching out themselves. Is it mostly self-referral, or is it something that you're interacting or sending letters back and forth or getting referrals from GPs around the country as well?
So when we first set up the service, you have to imagine we had no patients. It was very challenging, but very exciting as well. So we had to get a website, we had to get a phone number, we had to get an email, and we set up the service. And although we thought patients were mainly going to come from primary care, in fact, it happened around COVID and lockdown. So we weren't able to go out and talk to GPs and raise awareness as we do now. We got self-referrals, and it literally would be the phone would ring and we'd be like, oh, we've got a patient. And it trickled and trickled and trickled, and patients have come through, and we're now getting, 50 patients coming into the service almost every month. So there is a real unmet need out there that if you offer the service, patients will find you and they will come. However, in the last 2 years, I've been working with the Royal College of GPs as the clinical champion, and so we have done a number of raising awareness events, including quarterly webinars. There is a gambling harms hub which we've written on the Royal College website with e-learning for GPs and other healthcare professionals. And through that, we are seeing increasing numbers coming from general practice. The NICE guidelines have really made the recommendation that GPs are in a really privileged position in that we see lots of patients. And so the guidance is that you don't need to know anything about gambling harms, but what they do recommend is that when you are in certain consultations, so it might be mental health consultations, it could be patients with physical symptoms. Often they're patients that come with anxiety, insomnia, palpitations, to just think about gambling harms. And especially in the mental health consultations where you ask about alcohol, recreational drugs, the push is please also think about gambling. So that's the raising awareness bit we're doing. So you raised a good question about referral letters. So what we know, which is true in other addictions as well, is people are often experiencing gambling harm for many years, and often it's known as the hidden addiction, because compared to being addicted to alcohol or drugs, obviously your family, your friends, your colleagues are aware of it, where this can stay hidden for up to, many people don't come to us until they've been doing this for 10 years, and then they've suddenly lost something or their partner's found out. So it's a hidden addiction, and so when they reach out, you need to really help them then and there. So what we are really working on with the clinical systems such as EMIS and System One is that the GP can refer in very, very easily without long clinic letters. Or in terms of our raising awareness in different regions across the country, we're asking GPs just be aware of the services in their area, whether that is the national service that they come to us, or whether they go to the voluntary sector, or whether they go to an NHS clinic if they have a secondary care clinic in their area. So it's meant to be quick. It's not meant to be huge letters.
And so you mentioned at the beginning that you do this sort of 2 days a week. Is that right? How does your sort of week put together? Because it sounds like you've got lots of different roles.
So I have 2 days a week face to face in the GP practice, which is on a Wednesday and a Friday. And then I have obviously all the meetings that go with being a GP partner with our practice management team, so around governance, workforce, the contracts. And then I have 2 days a week with the primary care gambling service, which is really varied. And actually, I suppose that's the thing I would say about having different roles, is it really does allow you in a way to do more, because you're not just going into the same practice and listening to the same stories and dealing with the same issues every day in the GP practice. I have other interests around that because of this other job. And not only do I see patients with the gambling role, but also I meet people who gamble, who are in recovery. Obviously, I do a lot of conferences, webinars, but also I got the opportunity to sit on the NICE guidelines as a GP voice on that committee, which ran for 2 years before they published them in January of this year. I get invited to events at Parliament to discuss gambling harms and support and treatment with MPs, and also, provided evidence to the government on how the system is working at the moment, and how it should work going forward, now that the NHS and healthcare professionals are being asked to also get involved. So it's been really, really varied. And so although my week sounds busy, because it's so varied, it's doable. And what I've also done is left a day free, which obviously we all need, and that I use to mop up emails that I haven't had time to respond to, but also home admin, look after myself on that day. So it does seem manageable. It feels more manageable than if I was doing core GP every single day, because that, we all know, is exhausting. Yeah.
It's really interesting that the journey you've taken to becoming, one of the national experts on this, and how these things can be iterative. And once you've got an interest,
Yeah.
often that then leads into the next thing. People hear, oh, have you spoken to Emma about this because this is her interest, or have you thought about asking her if this is next on your agenda? So I think it's important that people feel inspired but not intimidated by that. That actually, once you're in something, often these things grow into something more. Once if there's evidence that it's really working in a really important area. I'm really interested how you got started. So how did you happen upon gambling harms as your sort of interest of choice?
So I've been a GP for 20 years now. So I probably did core GP for 15 years of that. But within that, I became a GP trainer, and I also took up some leadership roles with the it was the CCG then, but which we would know as the ICB. And I think those things were really formative, because there is a point, I think, early on in your career where you are doing your GP clinics, and I felt like I was cruising a bit. Like I felt I could do it with my eyes closed. I wasn't feeling challenged. So that's when I took up the leadership roles for the ICB and went on leadership courses. And that's when you observe and you develop people skills and what it's like to go to formal meetings and see conflict in meetings and how people deal with them. And so I think all of that experience really made me ready to do something else. And you're absolutely right. The start of this, I didn't know anything about gambling harms. I took a risk. I was thinking, okay, there's something else in me. I need to do something else. And I saw a job advertised to set up a service. And I was thinking, well, that's strange. I don't have any experience of gambling. I don't have any relatives that gamble that I'm aware of. But it came out of the work that's been done with practitioner health, and I think they had noticed that patients that they were seeing, one of their addictions was that they were gambling. So I applied for that job, and there was only three of us there at the beginning after I got it, which was quite scary, because then I realized, oh, actually, I'm quite good at seeing patients, and I love speaking to patients, and I love stories. But we actually had to set up the service. So there was a huge amount of challenge for me. Like I had to, get a formal email that could be used in the NHS for a service. We had to get a website. We had to develop the comms. So it was really fun. And there was only three of us, because that's all there was at the beginning in that arm of this service. And then slowly but surely, as I said, we got patients coming and needing help, then we're now a team of 22. So it's now a really big team. I suppose it's really saying that I didn't mean to get into this, but as I got into it, I did. And then people would ask me, oh, you're a GP, can you come on the NICE guidelines? Oh, the Royal College now are focusing on this area. Let's ask Emma to do this. So I suppose what I'm trying to say is always think about saying yes to things, think about saying yes to experiences, and don't get imposter syndrome, because actually there's not many, whether it's hardly any other GPs that know about gambling harms, but because I've immersed myself in it, I've really become experienced in it and can talk about it. And obviously I'm asked to talk about it a lot. And that's only through having at the beginning core skills, I think, of being interested in patients, wanting to meet as many people. So at the beginning, I immersed myself around people that had experienced gambling harms or been in recovery from gambling harms. I went and saw other treatment services and really spoke to as many people as I could to get to the place where I am. And did I have any real skills? Probably just loving being a GP and some leadership skills, I guess.
That's really interesting. So you sort of came to it from the sort of leadership point of view and setting up a service rather than thinking, actually, my passion is speaking to people with gambling harms. You know, it's really interesting how you sort of immersed yourself and how you sort of become an expert, because it is very daunting, I'm sure, at the beginning to think, right, ooh, hang on a second, I'm going to be the one advising people on this. How do I make sure that I become the expert that I need to be? How did you go about finding those people who had previous gambling addiction or had had experience of gambling harms, or I suppose had been involved in actually delivering support or interventions for people with gambling harms?
So, as well as setting up the service, the other funding that we received, which was from the Gambling Commission, which regulates the industry in the UK, and they have money for research, education, and treatments. And we, after setting up the primary care gambling service, we applied for some funding for education. And I got the role of writing a primary care competency framework for gambling harms. And through that, I had to look at all that, which helped for the NICE guidelines when I later came on the NICE guidelines committee. I had to look at the evidence that exists for treatment around gambling harms, not just in the UK, because actually there isn't much evidence in the UK, but looking at other countries. So there's some really good work that's happened in New Zealand. So I immersed myself in that, in writing that. And that was a competency framework which has seven competencies, which talks about just raising awareness amongst your primary care team, whether you work as the receptionist, the practice nurse, the physio, the pharmacist, the social prescriber. And then as you go up through the competencies, it describes more skills and knowledge that you need to help individuals with gambling harms to the point where you are running a service or commissioning a service when you're at competency seven, like myself. So that exists and is on the Royal College Gambling Harms Hub. So by writing that, I learned a huge amount because it was like a not a homework project, but it was like I had to write a competency framework and I had a blank piece of paper and I had to find out about gambling. So really early on, I had, read a lot of papers, looked at the evidence base and looked at international evidence as well. So that was the first thing. And then the second thing is as I said, visited as many existing treatment and support services that exist across the country. So now, 90% of gambling harms support and treatment has been done by the voluntary sector, so the third sector. So I visited as many of those as I could, and they have been providing a high level of care for many years. But more recently, with the statutory levy that's come out, the funding will now go from the Gambling Commission to the NHS. And so now it's being much more formalised. So this year is a really exciting year because the NHS is getting the funding for treatment, and OHID is getting the funding for prevention, which will work with the third sector on ideas and projects for reaching out into communities for gambling harms. So there's been many ways in which I've kind of immersed myself in this, and I'm now immersed in it again as the system changes with the new statutory levy, which means the funding will go to the NHS.
It sounds like it's a very timely opportunity if the NHS is going to suddenly have potential funding to have services set up or adapted or evolved, or if people do have an interest in this. If people are sat there listening thinking, wow, that really sounds like me, I like being a GP, but actually some of those mental health consultations or substance misuse or addiction or having a bit longer with patients is where my interest might lie, and I might not have any experience before. What advice would you give to those people to sort of jump on the opportunity or to sort of build on their interest from now? Because you mentioned, you've got 22 or 20 something GPs now working as a national service, but actually people might want to do something that's more local or regional to them.
There definitely will be opportunity going forward now that there is funding. I think what there has been before was a lack of funding for healthcare professionals to get involved in this area. So I would say to firstly go to the Royal College of GPs gambling harms hubs, because there is a huge amount of resource there. Undertake the e-learning. There's also podcasts there that have been available, which just give you more of a feel about what it means to work with patients that have gambling harms, what experience they're having, what are the skills you need as a GP to look after them, and see if you feel that, as you say, it is something you think you'd be interested in. And then I am really working with the Royal College to get some champions, but obviously again that depends on funding. But in terms of working in this area and getting trained up, I would say reach out to the Primary Care Gambling Service, because we are the face of primary care in this area, and we have links into all the regions. So yes, it would definitely help if I had more people involved in this, because if you imagine, I'm raising awareness across the country. So I also, I travel to Liverpool to do conferences. I go to Newcastle to do conferences. So it would be really good that we could expand this, the network of GPs that are interested in this area.
What a fantastic opportunity. And I'm sure there'll be lots of people thinking, actually, I never thought of this before, but that might be me. And we want to be good GPs, but actually be able to make money doing what we love. There's something to be said for jumping on when there's an opportunity to do something that may align with your interests. So thank you for sharing that, because I think, it's knowing where to start and knowing who to reach out to. For you, what do you see as the main benefits? I know you've touched on quite a few things, but for you, what are the main benefits of you having this GP with a special interest sort of role alongside your sort of normal, in inverted commas, GP work?
The things that have kept me focused is that I've been challenged, and actually there were times where I could go into work, as I said, I think before, could do it with my eyes closed. I've just come away feeling a little bit like, oh, there's more I can do. And actually, by stepping up and being bold and just going for an opportunity, it's actually kept me more engaged and given me more experience and, if you like, enthusiasm for being in my partnership. I have two brilliant teams, and I take learning from both sides to both roles. There's lots of overlap happens, and I think I probably would have just worked less clinically and maybe have more days off if I didn't have this other role, because you can't do face-to-face clinics with the complexities that are coming through core GP day after day after day. And so I think I have a really good balance now. And I've met so many people that have made me more enthusiastic about what I do. And I've had a huge amount of opportunity, which I never would have had if I had remained just doing core GP in my partnership.
Yeah, and that certainly echoes in lots of the people we've spoken to, that it just gives you that sort of nice feeling that you've got that balance, and one part of your job complements the other, but it almost gives you an escapism from the other that actually, and I'm sure, like you've said, just because you say you weren't doing any of the gambling harms work, it wouldn't necessarily mean that you were going to be a nine session partner, because actually, for many reasons, that doesn't suit most people, and is an awful lot. of mental load. Are there any downsides for you of having multiple different jobs, or specifically any link to working in gambling harms?
I think it's been challenging at times, just because of the politics of gambling harms. So there's been a lot of noise around funding, because obviously the Gambling Commission funding comes from the industry. This has now been more formalised by going directly to the NHS, so there's less conflict around that. But so the politics is quite interesting, just like the politics of being a partner and working with the ICB exists, but it's been more interesting, I guess, because it's been about government policy and producing a new white paper and a new statutory levy on the industry so that they do have to pay the NHS money for treatment and support. So that's been interesting. If you have two roles, you have to be really, really good at time management. So you can't be disorganized. And I think I learned early on that I have to be very clear with all my teams that right, today I'm a GP in the practice, and I am 100% focused there. Of course, you can email me or phone me if there's a drama or there's something happened that I need to get involved with, but not trying to do two jobs on the same day. So, because that can get really confusing and you end up doing neither of them well. So really going, this is a gambling harms day, this is a GP day, and then leaving that day off for myself so that I can manage home, so that I can, if you like, pick up the bits that I haven't had time to read a document in that week because I've opened that email and I've gone, oh my god, it's 32 pages long, I'll leave that till I'm free. So I think not doing a 5-day week, leaving yourself a gap for you, and being really strict with your time. And the other thing in terms of time management is now I often log in and I've written the jobs I'm going to do rather than read my emails first. Because if you read your emails first, you end up doing 2 hours work on emails and then you haven't actually responded to, you know, a paper or responded to something that somebody's waiting on. So that would be my advice, is try to keep the roles separate so that you're giving, your head is in one place at one time, and do your jobs, your main aims for that day before reading your emails, because in those emails are lots of other jobs. Yeah.
Yeah. What a fantastic top tip. I think It is. It's just such a nebulous thing, isn't it? If you open your inbox, it's just a rabbit hole of time that you can go down. Are there any other specific skills or requirements or networks or things you think it'd be worth people having a look into if this is their area or this is really sparking an interest? I suppose the only thing I was thinking, listening to what you're saying about CBT being the main sort of intervention that with evidence for gambling harms, is there any qualification in that you think would be required or benefit if you were going to work in gambling harms?
In terms of the starting point to find out what the recommendations for GPs are, I would say read the latest NICE guidelines. They came out in 2025. They're up to date and they're the latest. And the recommendations in there is that the GP asks the question, as we discussed earlier, and also raise awareness amongst their colleagues around gambling harm. So you could consider becoming a champion in your PCN or in your practice with the resources that are supplied by the Royal College. The Royal College are also doing a campaign, a bit like the veteran campaign, to get practices accredited. And this is really important. So if you do go onto the Royal College website and complete the e-learning or attend one of the educational webinars that they advertise over the year, you do receive a resource pack which you can use to maybe run a lunchtime meeting in your practice, maybe just put a notice board up with some of the resources. And in doing that, you can become an accredited practice and you get a formal certificate, which obviously you can discuss when you get CQC assessment. The main important thing is that you get posters to put up in the waiting rooms and consulting rooms, because what we know is that the public do not see the GP as a place they will go and talk about gambling harms. But we know that if the GP asked a question, when we've spoke to people who are now in recovery, they know that if the GP had asked, they would have opened up, but they couldn't find the words to raise it. So if we can train GPs and everybody else in primary care teams and kind of train patients, then hopefully these conversations are going to start happening. Because at the moment we are only getting 5% of people experiencing harm into support and treatment, and there is absolutely lots and lots of support and treatment across the country. And so it really is sad that because we're not aware of it, we're not signposting people into treatment. So I think in answer to your question, the focus is more for GPs to identify patients that need help. And in terms of the CBT, and often there's different therapies as well. CBT is the main one. The other therapy that's quite used is psychotherapy, because quite a lot of patients have had childhood trauma when you go back and look through the story of why they gamble. That is done by therapists. So the GP, so I don't get involved in actually giving therapy. What the GP in our service does with the mental health nurses is they do the initial patient assessment, which is a 45-minute to an hour consultation, which looks at all the harms they're experiencing, the kind of predisposing factors, the perpetuating factors, how they present, do they have any protective factors. Then we make a formulation which we take to the MDT, and there and then, because individuals often have co-addictions, they might be suicidal, they've lost their home. As a team, we then decide within a risk assessment and a safety plan of how we're going to manage that patient. So that's where the GP role would come in. So read the NICE guidelines. There is a network called the National Gambling Support Network, which is run by Gamble Aware, which is the main charity that the Gambling Commission has commissioned to do the public-facing campaign around gambling harm. And so that's a really interesting website. And also, wherever you are in the country, it would talk about the services that are available if you're in Newcastle or if you're in Liverpool or the Midlands and anywhere south of the country. It will give you more idea of where there's things going on in your region. So yeah, but I think start with the NICE guidelines, because that will really give you a feel of what the expectation of a GP needs to do. Yeah.
That's really helpful, actually, because I think, yeah, as I said before, these sort of things can come across daunting if there's specific, very specialist interventions that are being offered. But actually, your role as the GP is to be the GP, which actually, have the confidence to know you've got some of those skills. It's about evolving them and reaching out to the right networks and then seeing where you go from there. I'm sure it's something that lots of people won't have thought of, but actually, really can play to lots of GP strengths that lots of GPs have. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your advice. And actually, it's
No,
really
you're
nice to come
welcome.
away thinking, even if it's not your area of interest, you can still ask that question. And that's a really important intervention that you can offer and think about. We're asking people to end with a note of positivity. So you've shared lots of positivity today, but would you mind sharing what your highlight or best moment is of your life as or your journey to being a GP with an interest in gambling harms?
It was probably meeting Wes Streeting to discuss gambling harm, but at the same time being able to sneak in some other GP issues that I'm also passionate about, because I, as a GP, as a partner, I probably would have never got that opportunity in my core role. But because I have this extra role, I was able to meet him and talk about gambling harm, but also talk about other things that I feel passionate about in the system as being a GP.
Amazing. And I just, yeah, what a nice thought to end on that actually, you know, that these opportunities, taking full advantage of them and advocating for GPs is so important. And the wonderful thing about having interests and expertise and is it opens doors. And you never quite know where you're going to land. But actually, once you're there, making sure that you're clear in your thoughts and values and the messages that you want to convey is invaluable to those that you work with. So thank you again, Emma. It's been an enormously insightful, really inspiring, and I'm sure it's given people lots of food for thought. So thank you for giving up your time.
No, thank you for having me. Thank you.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training programme directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring programme for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening and good luck.
The GP Plus Careers Podcast.